And gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. Proudly brought to you by, what are we talking about? GorillaMedia.co.nz. Check out our fabulous archives at the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. Now, speaking of the Vinny Eastwood Show.com, it's been going through a little bit of remodeling, so I advise you to check it out, as has GorillaMedia.co.nz. I was just working on it a little bit before the show today. A couple of different networking opportunities that you can have with the show. First of all, we're on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, and basically what we really like to do is interact with our audience somewhat. So, you know, if you want to flick us an email or a Facebook message or tweet us or send us a message on YouTube, go right ahead. I was talking with a big fan of the show, last night for about an hour or so, just because, you know. They took the trouble to give me a few messages on Skype or whatever, so I'll talk to them. Why not? Why wouldn't I? It's not like the world's going to end, is it? Oh, the disaster. Speaking of frickin' disasters, policy towards the Middle East. Oh, my goodness. How silly is all this? We've got 1,200, I think, US troops and a big F-off ship heading into Libya to train up rebels? What's going on here, man? Come on. And, you know, this isn't some conspiracy theory or anything. Trust me, it was written in Reuters. So, you know, what do you think, Will, about this? I mean, sending troops, foreign troops, into a country that's in the middle of a civil war?
Well, it's a statement, isn't it? I mean, it's fairly obvious. It's either a threat or perhaps more than that.
Well, it's like they're talking about this on Freedom Files earlier with Bob Chapman. There could be a precursor to World War III. And for heck's sake, everything seems to be a precursor for World War III these days. Everything's a precursor towards the end of the world. So much frickin' doom and gloom out there. Drives me absolutely up the wall. And I almost bought into it yesterday, actually. You know, and I'm not denying that the end of the world is nigh, or that World War III is going to start raging down upon us like nuclear fire from the sky. I'm not denying that it's a possibility. It's just buying into the fear that I'm trying to avoid, because I really don't want to be some very, very scared, chattering monkey when the bombs start falling or when the waves start crashing. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinny Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. We'll be right back. welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. And, well, for some reason, I'm starting to feel quite confident and happy of late. Maybe it's because I've been uploading Shiite Muslim loads of videos up to YouTube. Seriously, I cannot believe how many videos I've been uploading just in the past week alone. And these are, I've got two YouTube channels, right? There's Mr. News Guerrilla Media and Eastwood Vincent. And Eastwood Vincent was kind of like my personal YouTube channel, you know. That's where I put up all the music gigs that I film and some protests that I go to and things of that nature. And Mr. News Guerrilla Media is sort of like my professional activist type channel. Because I'm sort of living in this sort of personal dichotomy, if you will, you know, with one foot in the political activism side and one foot in the total revelry nihilism side. It feels quite good. In fact, I'm going to go out to my favorite type of party tonight. It's called a shift party, and it's been called somewhat of a cult, I think, from some people. Because, well, basically, you get your kind of quota of hugs for a month. When you go to one of these parties, everybody's just so happy, nice, lovey-dovey, and all of that kind of stuff. Vinny, you know, it's great. Extremely nice. And another thing that I've been kind of looking back on is, like, this concept of credibility. And I always claim that I've got no credibility. I'm not a classically trained journalist or anything along those lines. And Will doesn't reckon it's a good idea for me to say, Vinny, you don't have any credibility. You know, that's a bad idea. And I'm just like, well, you know, I want to be as professionally unprofessional as possible. Because essentially, if you claim to have credibility, then you can say one thing and then lose it. So I'm just going to go whole hog and just never claim to have credibility. But the guests that we have on our show, on the other hand, those are the ones that have real credibility. And we're just kind of, I don't know, I consider myself sort of like a beating chamber of thought. You know, there's nothing wrong with thought. Doesn't mean you can rely 100% on it, but at least it's better than not thinking, which is what the vast majority of people are doing anyway, in my opinion. Now, speaking of which, past experiences, I had an appearance one time on a radio show called Green Planet FM, hosted by a wonderful person who our somewhat fabulous producer, Mitch Santel, also produces, called Tim Lynch. And I don't know, I was just listening to it. Just recently, it's uploaded at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. If you go to the archive section and look up Vinnie on other shows, I've been on like 10 other shows, and I just realized this morning that I was also on another show called The Global Freedom Report, so I need to upload that one as well. So it's like, man, I'm like freaking all over the place. I'm going on Time for Hemp later on next week as well. So, you know, I'm getting out there, man. I'm like the gonorrhea of talk radio. And I'm just as disgusting. But in either case, I wanted to actually play you a wee clip from that radio show, which I found was, well, almost as the people in the room with me at the time when I said what I said, inspiring. So without further ado, I'm going to play you my little YouTube video, How to Create a Media Revolution, Mr. News. Here we go.
Let's talk about the future, which is a microsecond, a nanosecond in front of us. Let it unfold.
Now, the future for me, I'm probably going to be sitting here in the studio in the very near future. Oh, wait, I already am. Here we go. No, but really, I think for me, I want to really develop guerrilla media. The idea of guerrilla media is to develop a network of activists. Now, activists, believe it or not, are today's reporters, okay? They're the people who do the research. They're the people that are in the thick of the propaganda and understand the ins and outs. When the mainstream news goes being questioned somebody. They're questioning a business leader or a politician often, or the leader of an organization. All three of those types of people have loyalties and bands to those organizations which they cannot break, so there are certain things that they aren't allowed to say. Activists, on the other hand, they have no such ties. They are a law unto themselves, and they have no pecuniary gain by telling the truth. And often the truth that they tell is what the politicians, organization reps, and business people don't want anybody to hear, and so hence they never say it. And it is that revolution that I seek to bring about, and that's what Mr. News means. I mean, I haven't actually told anybody this before. Mr. News means media revolution news, because if you can stage a revolution in the media, you'll make a revolution in the mind. So if you can, at least I'm trying to gather this group. I've been socializing and networking with activists for quite some time, nearly 2 years now, to do this project. You know, we got radio, we got video, we got writing. Okay, that's all you really need. On top of that, I think a great idea would be a corporate model, so that you can make a corporation whose specific intention is to be anti-corporate, using the ironic mechanisms that have been placed to enslave us, to actually take them over again. That's what I'd really like to do, using the very cage that has locked us all up, to break out. Of it, if you will. I mean, the key here is non-violent change. You don't need to hurt anybody in order to make huge changes. Gandhi knew this, which is why he liked the idea of large-scale non-compliance. Now, thinking about history, how do successful revolutions work? I mean, my favorite three examples would be the American Revolution. Everybody got sick and tired of taxation without representation, spread a whole lot of information about, lit a fire in the minds of men, and then used a movement to overthrow a tyrant. I like that idea. Second idea was obviously Gandhi with the non-violent non-compliance. So you can put that on there. And the other revolution that I'm liking now is Hugo Chavez's one, where his specific policy, once he was elected, was to go out and educate the people about what their rights were and what a good government is supposed to do for them, and to instill a sense of honor in the population, so that when the CIA staged a coup against him, he had millions of people on the streets, and they threw out the coup leaders and they brought him back. So not only do you need to be creative like the American founding fathers, peaceful like Gandhi, but you also need to have benevolence like Hugo Chavez in order to lead a peaceful revolution of any kind. And what I seek to do is just a media revolution.
Yeah. I thought that was actually a pretty cool sort of little snippet of that particular show. If you wanted to listen to that entire show that we did with Tim Lynch, also Martin Adlington, the Culture Jammer, and Dana Stewart of Fruit for Our Children, who's an independent filmmaker who worked with our somewhat fabulous producer Mitch Santel in a good film called Real and Raw. Just go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and click on the little radio archives thing, and it'll drop down and go to Vinnie on other shows, and you'll see all the other places that we've been. And I think this is probably one of the most important ideas of being a truther, or being a human being, really, is to experience as much as you can and go to as many places as you can, sort of thing. I mean, because you're only on this earth for, I don't know, well, debatably, let's take the premise that we only live one life. You know, some people don't believe that, and I don't know, maybe there's evidence for that, maybe to a certain extent. But at least, at the very least, we're here in this one particular form for a period of time. And all of our experiences are accumulated through these particular forms. You know, these eyes, these ears, this nose, we experience all these different things. And I think it's variance that really makes our senses come alive. If we're looking and hearing or smelling the same thing all day, every day, oh my goodness, does it get boring. And believe me, I know. It's up from the age of 19 to 20, 24, I think. had something like 16 different jobs. You know, it just bored me so very quickly, much quicker than other people, perhaps. Realizing that, hey, I'm just doing the exact same menial task all the time, you know, doing laboring or some description of other manual labor or selling crap, whatever. It's all the same stuff after a short period of time. And I can't stay in any situation where that's my reality, where I can't go out and do anything different. Maybe it's because I want to be free, and I don't think that having the exact same thing happen to you every day adds up to freedom. What do you think, Will?
Well, I mean, routine may be included in freedom. That it depends who's. It depends what factors are controlling the routine or setting the routine. I mean, there's routine in nature. With the sun coming up every morning, I suppose the simplest example. But yeah, you know, life can be boring, especially if we're boxed into these, you know, controlled paradigms. Yeah, I mean, people, ultimately, we're not meant to be caged. Just like the animals that petter and like organizations would argue for. You know, once again, it's about reflecting on yourself. And it just kind of, you know, you're talking about what people are run through their minds all day. And I read somewhere yesterday that there's three levels of thought. The lowest common denominator is people talking about other people, you know, ninnying celebrity stories. The mediocre form of thought is people just talking about things, you know. Oh, the weather's nice today and that ice cream was nice and I'm going to go to that concert tonight and that sort of stuff. And the highest form of thought being people who sit around and talk about ideas, whether they're business ideas, political ideas, philosophical ideas, social ideas. And, you know, I read it and I thought, well, that's just very true. There's a good breakdown there and some illustrations, but, you know, it's just, I think it's very true. And all of us can do, you know, the base level stuff, but we should try and engage in the constructive thought.
Well, you know, you got a point there, and this is the thing about going somewhere. Okay, and you're either going somewhere in your real life or you're going somewhere in your head, so long as you're doing something, you know. And that's the difficulty, is when, what was it, the Lady Gaga's newest album is the hottest topic for you. How does that improve you as a human being? How does that influence the rest of your life to come? Does it make your current situation any different?
Well, no. I mean, to a lot of people, it's kind of like an economy to a businessman, to an economist. The desired outcome is a static, predictable movement, a steady course. And so what they do is, what the system as a whole does anyway, I can't use the word they because it upsets people all the time, is they can't get away from saying it. They co-opt people's scope of experience to the point where people have a drive on a shorter scale. So people drive towards Friday or Saturday night. And so what happens between the Monday and Fridays really doesn't matter. You know what I mean? They end up living for the weekend or living for the end of the month, or it's largely set by a pay cycle too. If you pay people fortnightly or monthly, you find they'll drink less and be less vapid.
Are you serious, though? I mean, my sister gets paid monthly, and the only time when she started drinking less is when she went to go have a stomach band retightened, you know, that kind of thing. I think it's like if you have access to funding kind of thing, or something of that nature, that you can go and be vapid. I mean, it's like if you're poor as, it's far less likely that you'll be out buying drinks in a bar because you can't afford it.
A lot of people argue that, well, you know, that's the other side of the argument too. People are too poor and people are too hard done by to think about these sort of things that we are, and we're just, you know, wasting time with circular thoughts. But, you know, having not come from a background of just, you know, complete prosperity, being poor and doing menial tasks, I mean, always gave me the opportunity to think like this. I mean, I'd be doing a manual job, you know, laboring on a construction site or something, and I'd be thinking larger thoughts at the same time as carrying a pile of wood up the stairs or something. I'd be looking out and going, okay, this is how they operate. This is how, you know, seeing the circular nature of things. And so I think no matter where you are in the paradigm, I don't think there's really any excuse for not widening your perspective, for not opening your mind and then not challenging yourself, other than the fact that it's difficult and people want easy living.
I think everybody wants an easy life, but I don't think anybody has one, really. I mean, it doesn't matter what your experience is. Often everything, no matter how insignificant, appears quite challenging at the time, you know, and that's the gift of, hindsight, isn't it? Is that you can look back at these hard times or whatever, and you can laugh or you can rationalize them and throw them away, put them back in your nice little neat box of stuff that you either A, never talk about, or B, always refer to and never shut up about. And what's happening here, I think, and in particular with the concept of working, is that when you are at a job, when you are being paid, I mean, and I was driving down the road the other day, and I saw this guy with his, you know, his suit and his tie and all of that kind of stuff, door-to-door salesman for a telco. You know, I've been in his position. I know what he's going through, which is why it was no surprise when I noticed him looking at his watch near the end of the day, just praying that for somehow the numbers will go down faster. But they don't go down faster. You're enslaved for the same period of time every day. And this is the difficulty. It's like, it's almost like you spend the majority of your life counting down the minutes to the time where you can conceivably have a taste of freedom again, if only for a short while. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we will be right back after the break.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing. Writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. Was the loser now will be later to win, for the times they are a-changing.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. The topic has come up about work and really what it actually embodies. And one of the things that we talked about on the break was that, you know, me and Will, we go out to protests and things like this, and one of the very, very predictable, in fact, I would now deem it a cliche, that somebody will drive past or walk past, and of course not stop to talk to you or justify what their statement is, and say, get a job, as if standing up for people's rights is not a profitable enough use of your time. Now, this is a frustration on many levels. A1, yes, I do have a job. In fact, I have many, some of which are unpaid, some of which are paid. And Mr. Person driving past randomly in the car is proud that he has a job because it means that he can feed his family, he's providing for them, and this, that, and the other. He's proud, essentially, to have to work because he's got no real choice, essentially. And I think this is the real irony, I think, is that work is no longer a choice that is given. It is a mandate by which you have small choices within it. You know what I'm saying? It's like there's an A and a B, and the C is still in, and the C is put between A and B. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a false choice with a tiny bit of variation. You know, you have to have a job, but you can have any job you want, except you'll never get any of the jobs that you really, really want. Really? Well, most people won't anyway. I think the vast majority of people who are at work are freaking miserable because they don't really have any say in what happens in their companies. Okay?
Well, let me follow this up. I mean, if trying to help your country and if demonstrating, protesting, or taking any form of action against a corrupt leadership isn't work, I'd like to know what work is. You know what I mean? Like, and on the subject of work, there should never be any such thing as unemployment because as many people as there is work. Because just think about the economy in broad terms. A lot of people can't even think this. Why is it that a shop that could make you toast and coffee exists? Why is it that someone can have a cafe? I'm not ripping on people having a shop. I'm just saying, why is it that that can exist? Because other people are too lazy to do it for themselves. That's why. The only reason there is so much of a service industry is because people are too lazy, distracted, or enslaved to be able to do things for themselves. There is no reason to have supermarkets. There is no reason to have cafes. There is no reason there are just so many things that people can do. I mean, I'm not saying the average person can service every component of their car and therefore we shouldn't have mechanics. But once again, it raises the issue of the specialization of labor. And we should have specialization of labor because people have different skills and different tendencies. But does that extend to making coffees? And then I'm honourable because I work in a cafe and I pay my taxes, and that person who's protesting against the government, they're bad. I mean, give me a break.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just
totally.
And that's what I mean. Like, I was once outside TVNZ, Television New Zealand, our state government media, state media. You know how they always, when they refer to Arab nations, they're like, state-controlled media won't allow these protesters on, you know what I mean? As if we don't have state-controlled media. Anyway, I'm outside there, you know, CIA headquarters, New Zealand, and getting at them with a megaphone about 9/11 and about global warming and about the banks and everything, just getting in their face with a megaphone. And some of them come outside and, you know, having a bit to say. Actually, a lot of people from TVNZ came outside and said they agreed with us, but they were afraid of a certain Canadian individual, if she's listening, little shill that works up there. But anyway, a guy out on the street was parked up at the lights, and he tooted and then said something to me like, why don't you get a job, you hippie, or something like this. And I don't go out dressed in rags like a hippie for a start. And, you know, at the time I was actually...
And you wear deodorant too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't look like it. You don't smell like it. You're not pushing climate change propaganda like it.
I just finished work, you know, managing a freaking floor and an air conditioning fit out in a high-rise building. Yeah, and I just finished. And I clean myself up, and half an hour later I was up protesting outside TVNZ, and this guy goes, get a job, you have your night. And so I turn on him with a megaphone. And I said, what have you done, you little bastard? What have you ever done to help this country? What are you ever going to do? Do you think that just carrying out menial tasks day in, day out is ever going to help anyone? Can't you just look back in history and see the result of that? I'm not against development, and I'm not against industry, and I'm not against that sort of progress. All I'm saying is when we have political enemies and they're eating out our substance, what's going to stand in the way when the media doesn't?
Well, absolutely. And the point is, it's like, we need people to stop burying their heads in the sand about this. And you can't actually stop that from happening. Those who truly are committed to burying their heads in the sand will continue to do so, even if it's the only body part that they have left. Even after being beheaded, they will still bury him in the sand, you know. It's absolutely insane. And people really, the reason why I get frustrated, and maybe a lot of other people, I don't know, is that we are acting under the base assumption that people are generally reasonable, intelligent, and or kind, that kind of thing. However, you get a lot less frustrated if you base under the assumption that people are actually out of their freaking minds and have no idea how to deal with reality. Then the world makes a lot more sense all of a sudden, because then you can explain all the crazy things that go on, that they are unexplainable. With the tenets of people being sane. Now, as far as people being good, on the other hand, I can guarantee you, and this is the same down in Christchurch, you know, and I've met people down in Christchurch that I've just been like, oh, I don't like them very much. But the fact of the matter is, as soon as that earthquake hit, everybody was in each other's arms, comforting one another, being really nice and good. So perhaps that goodness is like a dormant volcano. When it erupts amazingly. It's a spectacle. But when it is dormant, you would have no idea that it's even a volcano. You just think, hey, it's just some random mountain.
I mean, on the base subject of work, if you really think about it, what do humans need? We need food, water, shelter. Yeah, and the bottom of the pyramid. Yeah? Maslow's law of needs. Okay, we need food, water, shelter. If we had to provide that for ourselves, or even pull together as communities or friends, as some people do in some parts of the world, and were to build our own homes and provide for ourselves our own water, I'm on tank water here, and to grow our own food, that's what I call work. I don't call work speculating and pushing up bids on fiat currencies in front of computer screens all day. I don't call work... I mean, the only reason there is such thing as unemployment, if you really think about it, is because of the government and bureaucracy. It's because government and bureaucracy steals tasks that other people should be responsible for themselves. The government is the only reason for unemployment. Because if you didn't have them, and you had unemployed people that everyone wants to moan about, these bludgers who want to sit around and do nothing all day, they would die. They would die faster than they do at the current rate from being poisoned and everything else. Okay, so the only reason there's unemployment is because of bureaucracy and government and centralized power. And I'd like to see any other theory on that. But then the same people who moan about the unemployed vote for this government. They love it. They call it democracy. They go, oh, I love this MMP system. Oh, it's so centrist. They're the very reason for their own situation. You know, and then they complain about people not working as if everyone just had jobs in the current structure, if everyone was employed and everyone was just paying taxes and everything else, and taxes are being increased, you know, 5% per year as they are, that everything would just be fine. Is that their argument in saying go get a job and stop protesting?
I don't think they have an argument. I don't think it's even rational what they're doing, you know. And again, this comes back to the fact that we're trying to find some sort of logical reason for them doing what they're doing, and there is none. It's kind of like, I don't know, looking for terrorists that blew up the towers on 9/11 and then being frustrated because you can't find any. It's because you're not looking for the right thing, bro. You know, and what I find interesting is the people who have an opinion based on zero facts, that are so adamant about their opinion because they've based it on, just basically zero, naught, but assumption, right? And they'll defend it to the freaking death. I mean, you know, I can't tell you how many fist fights that I've almost gotten into in bars and clubs over politics. It's unbelievable, you know? Something that somebody never actually contributes to in any way, shape, or form other than ticking a box once every couple of years as their representation of their democratic process will actually hurt another human being who's simply trying to have a discussion about it based upon reason, evidence, and facts. This is not a sane society. This is decidedly insane. There is no rationality behind it. So, again, what we have to do, in my opinion, you know, and I could be wrong, and I think that's something everybody should follow as well, is the principle that, hey, I could be wrong. Because, you know, nobody seems to be doing that anymore. Everybody thinks that I'm right, I know everything. Therefore, everybody else who disagrees with me is 100% wrong and should be locked in jail as a terrorist and or criminal. Or better yet, we should have full-on, full-spectrum surveillance of them at all times to make sure they don't spread any of their vital, vile, freedom-promoting propaganda. Because I am an important CEO, and my seats and my car should be cleaned by slaves, and I need 8 cylinders in my car. I need a V8. I need all of these other trappings because I don't actually have anything of value inside me. So I need to make sure that everybody sees how valuable I am on the outside. And well, look, that way they'll assume that it's the same elsewhere. But it's just not a lot of the time.
I don't judge people's politics based upon what car they drive. And I know there's an element of truth to what you're saying, but, you know, people can have nice things. That's not what really bothers me. But one on the other side of things, you know, you're talking about protesters and how, you know, they're assumed to have no jobs and be bludgers and whatnot. That's why I love when you have guys like the few people in the truth movement who actually have a little bit of money and have made it a little bit, that they can be better at the matrix system than the scum that's normally say get a job, that they can have a better car, that they can have a better house, yeah, and they can still hate the government. I love seeing that because then those people have less avenues to argue back. I love seeing millionaires around the place who hate the system as much as I do. I love it because it shuts those little, you know, it shuts those scumbags up.
Does it really shut them up, though, Will?
It shuts them up because that's their main argument. Is, oh, you don't like the system because you haven't got a lot of money, or you don't like it because you're not successful by their standards. And so you beat them at their own game, and then you beat them at the real game too. You shut them down and show them for the scum they are.
That's right. When you're standing up on nothing, it's pretty easy to kick the little ladder that they're standing on out from under them. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. And we'll be right back after the break. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The show that's all about skinny jeans and things that men should never do, but suddenly for some reason are totally acceptable these days. Like diet soda, skinny jeans, high-heeled boots. And I'm not making this up here. This is an nzlifestyle.yahoo.com. Unbelievable. Dove Men Care for clean, comfort, body, and face wash. Come on, man. Where is masculinity these days? I mean, have we all just been drinking out of plastic bottles with feminizing chemicals in them for too long? Maybe that is the case. Or maybe it's a combination of factors. You know, we even got the little juice boxes and stuff like that. The kids are just so happily slurping out of right now and shrinking their package. Oh yeah, man, it's freaking unbelievable. You know, where the heck are we heading with this particular scheme? All right, we even got here the cosmetic concealer stick for men. Okay, conceal moles, dark circles, and blemishes. We have the foundation garments for men, okay? Like girdles for men, all right? Unbelievable. I cannot... It kind of sickens me to a certain extent, and it's not like whatever women are doing, men shouldn't do, or anything clean cut like that. It's more the fact that, hey, where's his tools? Where's his garage? Where's the stuff that he's inventing? Where's the, you know, where's the treehouse that he's building? Okay. Hold on. Nope. We don't have him outside or working on anything now. Instead, he's inside in the bathroom, checking himself out in the mirror, using clean cut look pomade hair products for men.
Exactly the point, Vinny. Exactly the point. This feeds back into work, so they can't do all these practical things anymore. And you know, when guys, you know, look, our parents' age, when guys were growing up, they knew how to change tires. They knew the basics of an engine. They knew how to clean a rifle. They knew, you know, general things. Now they know how to, I don't know.
They know how to colour their own hair with this new product.
So real skills are taken away from them. Real skills are taken away from them. And then, once again, it means they need someone else to make their coffee for them. They need someone else to change the oil in their car. They need someone else to do all these things, right? Because they've made everyone so inept. And this is what creates a service industry, and this is what creates unemployment, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people can't employ themselves, and because they haven't got any skills to employ.
Yeah. Oh, well, I see. And again, this brings up the other thing. Continuing on with this article, crying is one of these new things as well. Women are often perceived as weak or needy when they cry, especially at the office. Not so for the Speaker of the House, John Boehner. I've got a lovely picture of him here, bawling his eyes out next to the somewhat Skeletor lookalike Nancy Pelosi. Who I watched an interesting little hour-long documentary called Who Controls America about the influence of AIPAC and various other Israeli lobby groups who have essentially drafted, and I'm not sure if that's the right word for it, but I'm going to go with it anyway, drafted the evangelical movement to bind evangelical Christians with the state of Israel, not with Jews per se, but just with the state of Israel, because in the Bible it says so. And therefore, anything that happens that Israel's behind, whether it be 9/11 or slaughtering copious quantities of Palestinians or saying shalom to small groups of Palestinian children from behind the tank crew visors, it's okay. And anybody who criticizes them whatsoever, it is noted instantly. And you will get an email or some description of message from a very high up person somewhere who tells you that you shouldn't be talking that way. And if you keep doing it, you won't have a job for very long. We even had congressmen who came out against Israel. And the very next day, their main political opponent gets a $300,000 contribution to their campaign. And create copious quantities of advertising flooding all over the television, all over the radio, that you simply cannot compete with. And, you know, surprise, surprise, if you criticize Israel, you'll find out that you won't get elected again, ever. Ever. Because they're that much in control of America. Now, the interesting point that they made at the very end of this film was that Israel really needs America. This is why they're so aggressive at taking down their detractors. Because if you take away America, who else have they got?
Well, I mean, I actually disagree with some of that. I don't believe in the upper echelons of power. There are countries. I don't believe it's America and Israel. I don't think they see it that way. I think there are groups of people, and they're not Israelis, and they're not Jews. They're something else, and they have a lot in common with certain people behind the levers of power in the United States and Britain also. And so, well, anyway, but people get into these identification issues where they identify the problem as Israel or identify the problem as America. You know, good luck to them.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it was like a Air Force general or a Navy general or something along those lines. He was asked one time if he wanted to, the next time he wanted to tell the president something that he didn't want the Israelis to know, he'd wait until the next time he saw the president in person. It just gives you the idea that for some reason people are tolerating a foreign intelligence agency of having innumerable amounts of influence over the corruption and all of the business that goes on inside the US government and who knows where else. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com brought to you in proud collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, standing up against the New World Order from 10,000 kilometers away, the fabulous fluoride-head fortress island of New Zealand. We'll be right back. Check it out. Delete the virus, alert the masses. Welcome back to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, where you can check out our fabulous archives with the amazing information that we've managed to get out in such a short freaking time. I was thinking the other day, Will, that we've probably interviewed more Kiwi activists than any other radio show in this country's history. You know?
I think most likely.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of any other radio show that's actually really tried to get out there and get different guests all the time, that kind of thing. I mean, today we don't have any guests because, you know, sometimes it helps to just sort of process and think things through in a certain way. And we don't have that that extra added, I wouldn't call it pressure or anything like that. It just gives us a little bit of extra added freedom, I guess, to just say what we think, because often it's us trying to ascertain what others think for the benefit of the audience. And sometimes I'm not sure if I actually get enough time to think about the things that I hear. And maybe I'm not alone in that problematic difficulty, you know. Maybe all of us have difficulty processing all the stuff we hear. I mean, like the topic of 9/11, for example, there's been a little panel discussion with me and a bunch of major 9/11 researchers, and I've just been kind of happily reading the dialogue going back between people like Gordon Duff and other high-level 9/11 truth activists, things of that nature. And it strikes me that arguments within the truth movement aren't anything like the argument that a truther has with a slave. They're nothing alike. There's far less name calling. There's a little, but far less. And which gives rise to my speculation that perhaps the concept of truth or infighting is mountains out of molehills, you know, because at the end of the day, we all agree 9/11 was an inside job, or at the very least, it certainly wasn't the official story. And I think that's the base premise that you really need to agree with things on. And it's having a debate and actually looking at the evidence together with people that are operating at high levels of research with evidentiary stuff and all of that kind of jazz. I found very, very amazing to actually be allowed to be part of this, because I was quite surprised when I started being CC'd into these emails. It didn't make much sense to me. I mean, who am I? Incidentally, I've interviewed a lot of these people and then started inviting them onto the show, so maybe that's why. But the other question is, when you are a 9/11 activist or a truth activist in any way, shape, or form, at what point do other people that are in that same field become your enemy? I'm not sure if they ever should, you know, because it's like, well, you know, another truther ain't gonna freaking try and kill you or enslave you. They may be talking about stuff that's wrong at worst. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, coming at you live from the fabulous Fluoride Head Fortress in New Zealand, Auckland, the most major shaking city in New Zealand. Well, second most shaken city, and we'll be right back after the break. Unity, please don't desert me.
Yeah, yeah, and no one like me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. So what you wanna do? How many dudes you really know can flow like this? Like this? Like this? Let's do it. How many dudes you know wrote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any, not many, if any. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this? I don't know anybody. Check, check to the mic, check a 1-2 from a crew coming through.
Welcome back. Nowadays, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, our great New Zealand artist there, Scribe, who incidentally is from Canterbury, where the Grand Christchurch quake has happened. The Great Christchurch Quake Refugee Abandonment, this article in from guerrillamedia.co.nz, written in by a man named Peter Hyde on the 2nd of March. It's 2 a.m. Like many people in Christchurch, I am not sleeping too well just now, but at least we now have power, so I can use the time productively. My personal history of the past week will have to wait. It may be interesting to some, but it's not important right now. What's important is what is not happening adequately in the acute post-quake period, because the official response is dwarfed by the size of the problem. A huge caveat. I don't have all-seeing eyes or a helicopter or good bandwidth. I certainly don't have any kind of special in with officialdom in their view of the situation, though not for want of trying to make contact during the past 5 days. So this is based on my perspective locally in the southeast and from the several drives into the Middle East, south and northwest of the city. There are three cities in Christchurch now, not one. Rescue City, Shower City, and Refugee City. Rescue City is inside the four main avenues and is cordoned off. That means, to all our knowledge, it comes out of it from the media, and it is an absolute honeypot for them. It's given us, understandably, incessant details and tales of images of injury, of tragedy, of loss, of broken iconic buildings, heroism, sacrifice, leadership, and gratifying international response. It's extremely television-friendly. My quake experience has started there, but actually almost nobody lives in Rescue City. The resources and attention which are seemingly being poured into it right now are not addressing the most urgent post-quake needs of the population of Christchurch. Shower City is any part of Christchurch where you can take a hot shower because you have electricity and running water in most working sewer lines. By latest estimates, that's about 65% of the city, much of it out west. In that part of Christchurch, weary and stressed people are getting on with life, though some may be wondering if they still have a job. And many of them with energy and time to spare are wondering if they can do more to help the rest of the city. The media naturally lives in Shower City, and they talk almost exclusively to the business leaders and the rescue leadership that also inhabit it. Refugee City is the rest of Christchurch, mainly the eastern suburbs, though there are pockets elsewhere. It includes perhaps 50 to 100,000 people, though a more mobile chunk of them may have self-evacuated by now. Only half of those who remain in Refugee City have power, and almost none have running water. Many have been living on their own resources and their neighbours for over a week now. That means that batteries have run down, gas, if they had any to start with, has run out, other supplies are low or gone. Roads are often very bad, and a lot of those from the poorer suburbs have no transport anyway. Their houses may or may not be intact. Their streets may be clear, broken, or full of silt or sewage. There are no showers or ways to wash clothes or to wash dishes or to heat the quote-unquote must-boil water that is available, assuming they can make it to the nearest water truck. Day after day, no refrigeration, no working toilets, and precious few portaloos, no face masks to defend against the blown silt. They have no internet either, and usually no phones, and their radio batteries are dead or dying. The papers, if you can get one, are rapidly dated, and usually far too general in their coverage. It doesn't help anyone without a car in Aranui to know that Fisher and Paykel are providing free laundries in Kaiapoi. All the above means the locals have few resources, little information, and no voice either. It's remarkably hard to call talkback radio or your local politician or emergency services when your landline is out and your cell phone battery is dead, or when it maybe has just enough charge to stay on hold for 5 minutes, but not 20, when calling the sole government helpline. The media flies over, drives past, and dips into Refugee City, usually at the main welfare or water points, but they don't cover it that much. From my observations, the officials who are making decisions about the relief effort seem to do likewise. We saw opposition leader Phil Goff the other day. He stopped for a photo op with the army group who had paused briefly at the cordon. Not that he or they talked to any of the locals waiting amidst the dust they'd stirred up, hoping for a nugget of information. Judging from the media coverage to date, the official response in this part of the city sounds reassuring. Relief centres, if you can get to them, and if it hasn't been relocated to Rangiora, a field hospital, ditto, army, two drive-bys in the past week, operation suburb teams, ditto, and this whole area is not even listed with them. Increased police presence thanks to 300 loaned Australians, some sign of them, but not enough, and some worthy and welcome images of food and other supplies being distributed at Morai and other central points. In these powerless suburbs, the official response is far from enough, especially in terms of the fundamentals. I came from a relatively well-off area. Most of its folk were better prepared than average for something like this. Good supplies of food, water, batteries, barbecues and the like. But even here, by the weekend, many people were bailing, mainly because of lack of information about how to survive here any longer. Their only contact with officialdom was being pushed from pillar to post by often unnecessary, and though they didn't know it at the time, temporary evacuations conducted by police, who were doing their best, but who themselves were overworked and underinformed. Such actions considerably eroded local confidence, especially when there was also no clear information about when power or water would return locally. My family's personal local response to the situation can be seen and not on the webpage itself, webcentre.co.nz/quake.htm. And that's the physical notice board of the printed letters, and especially the local volunteers and extensive human contact and moral support which it represents. But basically, we started making stone soup and our neighbors and fellow citizens contributed the other ingredients, and for this suburb, though not for everyone in it, the acute phase has now passed because more than half of us at least have electricity now. Thank you, Orion, the little fabulous contractors who are getting in there. But but all that was only possible because our family had the personal security skills, communication equipment, stationery, pens, papers, cards, bulldog clips, notice board, chutzpah, and above all, electricity borrowed from a cell site generator to make it happen. And also a couple of family members outside the city willing to be gophers for information and key supplies. Now, how many people in the eastern suburbs actually have all that? You might think that the Civil Defence or Red Cross or Army people who were doing all this as part of their role, helping people to stay in their homes by providing the essential information and, quote, where necessary, key supplies, they need to do it safely. My direct observations over the past weeks suggest otherwise, especially from officialdom's chosen central points. They are simply overwhelmed by the nature and extent of the crisis and tired and understaffed to boot. So this is a call to action. If you are local, find out where there is still no water and especially no power. There are places where the acute post-earthquake phase is still happening right now, and we will go on happening until we have those services. This is where people are under the most stress and where the risk of gastro-related illnesses and other major problems is inevitably going to be highest. Take them batteries, clean drinking water, bulk washing water, bottled drinks, milk, camp stove gas cartridges, face masks, transistor radios, alcohol hand cleaners, wet wipes, fresh fruit, dry and canned food, not frozen, unless you plan to hand it directly to someone at their house. If you are going to do that, take bags of ice too. Ignore the few main distribution centres. People who can get there easily will get help, as will those with good transport of their own, provided they have cash to spare. Instead, look for smaller points or obvious drop-off or drop-in signs. I can't help you find these, and nor can officialdom. Just drive to an affected area with a carload and ask some locals. If there's one happening already, they will know. And even if you end up putting it on an obvious street corner with a please take one sign, it would do good. Rinse and repeat until all these suburbs have, especially, power and reliable transport, the need will not go away. Now, I think this is information that the New Zealand Herald posted out, even criticising itself or that. So, you know, to be commended. So the difficulty with the Christchurch quake is, like he says, just grand difficulty. Now, I thought, you know, whimsically at a moment, that I might go down to Christchurch and actually live in one of these crap zones so that I can feel what it's like to be down there. But of course, if I was to do that, I wouldn't be able to do the radio show, you know, and I wouldn't be able to get information out like this. And maybe I'm just using that as an excuse to not go down there. Isn't that an interesting paradigm? But, you know, I think that there's more than too much media on down there at the moment anyway. They don't need Mr. News in there mixing things up. Besides, if I start telling my my quake jokes and things of that nature, I could be lynched relatively quickly. And disasters are probably not the best place to be sending extra bodies. You know, that's my take anyway. Or I could just be being cowardly. But in either case, on to other news. 10 drugs, I think it was, that are causing the most amount of damage. It was the legal ones, apparently. Here we are. Top 10 legal drugs linked to violence. This is from timehealthland.com or healthland.time.com. When people consider the connections between drugs and violence, what typically comes to mind are illegal drugs like crack cocaine. However, certain medications, most notably some antidepressants like Prozac, have also been linked to increased risk for violent, even homicidal behavior. Like we've said on the show many times, that so many times in fact, that it makes us want to take Prozac, or B, homicidal. A new study from the Institute for Safe Medication Practices, published in the journal PLOS-1 and based on data from the FDA's adverse event reporting system, has identified 31 drugs that are disproportionately linked with reports of violent behavior towards others. Please note that this does not necessarily mean that these drugs cause violent behavior. Actually, they do. It's just not in absolutely every case, because some people just kill themselves instead of killing others. For example, in the case of opioid pain medication like OxyContin, people with prior history of violent behavior may seek drugs in order to sustain an addiction, which they support via predatory crime. And I lived in a house with some people who were, shall we say, less than reputable drug users. And I went away for the weekend one time, a 3-day weekend, and I came back to find everything in my room had been stolen. And I was the only one home at the time. So what I did is I went into the rooms of all of my flatmates to find, you guessed it, all my stuff that they divvied out between them. So not the most bright of people. But of course, that's illegal drug use when they just steal all your stuff. And I'm sure that if they were on pharmaceutical drugs, I probably wouldn't have been able to go to the weekend because I would have been assassinated. Now, in the case of antipsychotics, the drugs may be given in an attempt to reduce violence by people suffering from schizophrenia and other psychotic disorders. So the drugs here might not be causing violence, but could be linked with it because they're used to try to stop it. Hey, isn't that a great way to hide the fact that your drugs cause violence, is give them to violent people that makes them more violent, so you can just blame the violent person and not the violent medication? Nonetheless, when one particular drug in a class of non-addictive drugs used to treat the same problem stands out, that suggests caution. Unless the drug is being used to treat radically different groups of people, that drug may actually be the problem. Researchers calculated a ratio of risk for each drug compared to others in the database, adjusting for various relevant factors that could create misleading comparisons. Here are the top 10 offenders. Oh, mate, and these are some big, long pharmaceutical names, and this is the interesting thing. I don't like to stray away from the fact that these things, I mean, they're so difficult to pronounce. How the hell are you supposed to know what's in them? Desvenlaxafine. No. Desvenlafaxine, or otherwise known as Prestique, an antidepressant which affects both serotonin and noradrenaline. This drug is 7.9 times more likely to be associated with violence than other drugs. Venlafaxine, or Effexor, a drug related to Prestique in the same class of antidepressants, both are also used to treat anxiety disorders. Effexor is 8.3 times more likely than other drugs to be related to violent behavior. Fluvoxamine, or otherwise known as Lovox, an antidepressant that affects serotonin, SSRI. Lovox is 8.4 times more likely than other medications to be linked with violence. Triazolam, or otherwise known as Halcyon, a benzodiazepine which can be addictive, used to treat insomnia, is 8.7 times more likely. Atomoxetine, or otherwise known as Stratera, used to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. You know, atomoxetine? It sounds like some description of atomic particle. Hey, you've got ADHD? Have this, boy. It'll make you glow in the frickin' dark. That'll focus your attention. Stratera affects the neurotransmitter neuroadrenaline and is 9 times more likely to cause violence. Mifoquine, or otherwise known as Larium, a treatment for malaria. Imagine you had malaria. And that's 9.5 times more likely to cause violence. And of course, there's amphetamines, which are used to treat ADHD and affect the brain's dopamine and noradrenaline systems, are 9.6 times more likely. Paroxetine, or Paxil, and this one's a famous one everywhere, it's so dangerous, an SSRI antidepressant. Paxil is also linked with more severe withdrawal symptoms and a greater risk of birth defects compared to other medications. It is 10.3 times more likely. Fluoxetine, which is Prozac, the first well-known antidepressant, is 10.9 times more likely. And Varenicline, Chantix. That sounds like a nice little thing that we could have at a grand thing, isn't it? The anti-smoking medication is 18 times more likely to be linked with violence compared to other drugs. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Whatever you do, don't quit smoking and take drugs to help you. We'll be right back.
There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're staging a revolution out there, whether it's a media revolution like Mr. News or something else like in Egypt, we support you. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in conjunctivitis with GorillaMedia.co.nz. New Zealand's unconventional news. Hey, well, I was wondering the other day, well, what is an expert? You know, and how do we decipher information? And we talk about discernment quite often. And I'm wondering, do I even have any freaking discernment? I mean, well, I guess I do have a certain level of it, but is it enough? And I think maybe if you discern that you simply don't have enough discernment, then you have enough. But I could be wrong.
I don't know. I mean, discernment's not such a measurable thing, perhaps.
It's not. This is getting quite a difficult one, actually. I would wonder. I mean, let's say you got two, say, activists or two researchers or two political, you know, whatever your game is, whatever your bag is, whomever your most trusted group of individuals are. Let's say you got two of them and they totally disagree with one another and you trust them both. They can't both be right, can they?
Well, I'd say that you probably don't know enough about both of them.
Yeah.
Because if you have really deep conversations with people, then you'll soon realize whether they're friend or foe, unless they're a really, really good actor, which is why I don't sort of trust the space beam people on 9/11 issues, and I will say space beam because they can't show where on earth it come from. I mean, you get into subjects like that, and it's like, who am I going to trust? The Jim Fetzer side of things, the Morgan Reynolds side of the 9/11 argument, or the Stephen Jones, Richard Gage side? Well, I'd choose the Richard Gage side.
But that means that you have to make a choice, you know? I'm just wondering, you know, I mean, like, we kind of get forced into choices about what's right and what's wrong based upon what our own assumptions are.
And
what I find interesting is, like, so let's say Dr. Judy Wood, for example, who we've had on the show. I thought it was quite interesting, you know, she's come up with so much evidence, et cetera, and so has Richard Gage, and so have all these other people, and yet they both claim that the other people don't have any evidence when they both clearly do. right? And they make that blanket statement.
They don't both clearly have evidence.
Well, let's say, for example, we haven't looked at
no space beam documented evidence.
Okay, so you've looked for space beam documented evidence, I assume, and you've read Dr. Judy Wood's book then.
There is no evidence.
So see, and again, we're getting...
I don't have to read 500 pages. Look, I'm not saying she's dishonest or anything, but say if someone was putting out disinfo, if you fall into if you get suckered into reading 500 pages of their disinfo, then their disinfo's worked. That's what it's all about. It's about muddying the waters. If you have discernment, you don't need to read the 500 pages because they should be able to show in a simple and elegant form without 500 pages. Richard Gage doesn't go, everyone, you need to read this 500 pages.
Yeah, that's
Instead,
true.
Instead, it's just like an hour documentary. There's easily understood, easily verifiable pieces of evidence. It may not be 100% conclusive because there is no 100% conclusive in that particular debate, but there is closer to truth and there's closer to lies on a sliding scale, I would say. But, I mean, that's the problem is saying, you know what I mean, like saying we have to make a choice, and I would say, well, yeah, we do have to make a choice. It's the same as the so-called zombies making a choice and realizing that George Bush and Barack Obama aren't acting in the best interest of the country. Is it not the same sort of argument, just on a different level?
I don't know. I just think that if your argument is I don't have to look at the evidence in any case, then you're automatically wrong. You know, it's like somebody claims to have evidence and you refuse to look at it because you think it's wrong, even though you haven't looked at it, then you're the one who's automatically wrong.
I mean, I have looked at the no plane theory and you know, I haven't just dismissed them out of hand. I didn't just say, oh, they're crazy nutballs. I've looked at it.
9/11 Truth did. I mean, that's what happened to Judy Wood when she got in there. They automatically started using these terms like space-based weapons and things of that nature, which she never claimed at all in any frame of reference.
But that's why do they claim space-based weapons then? Do you know?
Well, it's name calling, bro. As soon as you up to somebody who's got a theory that you don't agree, and this is just me, you know, playing devil's advocate. Of course, I'm not saying I believe either side. I'm honestly confused. I don't know.
And it's not name calling. It's because the SDI, or the what's commonly known as the Star Wars Defense Initiative, is in fact an offense program that George Bush Sr. had a lot to do with and is based in space. It's a satellite weapon system that they can use to try and destroy targets, be they individuals, cities, what have you. That's why people come up with the space-based weapons terminology, not because they're saying she's out in space or something.
No. Well, that was the thing. She never claimed that any of the technology was in space or anything along those lines. They just kind of made it up.
But she never said where it was either.
Mm-hmm. And that was the difficulty when I had her on the show. It's like I was just trying to get information out of her, and it's just like instead of giving me the solid like kind of little snippet that I sort of wanted, you know, that you could use for a soundbite, there's this long winded sort of slow enveloping of these evidence, quote unquote, to try and illustrate the fact before it's actually presented, and the difficulty is, and like you say, Richard Gage kind of puts it out in a very small, compact, one hour presentation. It's like, boom, yep, sweet, that's over with. I've now learned that. Whereas to demand that somebody does a 500 page book reading in order to comprehend what one person is saying as the minimum requirement to gain full understanding of a single idea, I think maybe a bit too much to ask of the average person.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, a lot of situations are. I mean, I'm not saying that's why she's wrong. I'm not saying just because a situation is complicated, I'd expect how they took down those towers to be complicated. I'm not saying that makes it wrong. What I'm saying is if someone can't just clearly lay out what they're saying, the author of the book can't clearly lay out in a nutshell what they're saying, what it's about, and here's documented XYZ, then, you know, and I've got to fill in, I've got to have a lot of faith that there's, I don't know, the 7-second delay in live TV and they edited in certain footage here and there, and here's this panning shot where a helicopter pokes out the other side of the building, and I don't know if that was verified footage or not. You know, it just turns into, to me, some sort of COINTEL operation. That doesn't mean that all the people who buy into it are COINTEL.
Mm.
That just means that it could have been initiated by COINTEL. You look at guys like Nico Haupt and the Web Fairy and a lot of these other people that go along with Judy Wood. And, I mean, Nico is nuts. Nico is nuts. And they get let off police charges and they get a free ride here and there. And even if they were correct, how is their message going to be more palatable and do 9/11 truth a justice when it's so bizarre that the majority of so-called conspiracy theorists can't digest it?
Well, and that was actually a question that I asked this panel of truthers that we've been having the emails on. One of the answers that I got was from Roy Harlow, the runner of the station down in Rush FM in Hamilton. Just give a good plug to them there, rushfm.co.nz. He said that it's not A or B or C. It might be A plus B plus C equals D. And because everybody's trying to add two and two together to get A or B or C, that they never come to the conclusion that it's actually A plus B plus C equals D, right?
But so, remember, some of the points are mutually exclusive, though. Some of the points can't be – I mean, you can't have – TV fakery and real planes flying into real buildings at the same time.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But more the point of the destruction of the towers themselves. I mean, we've got these directed free energy technology weapons that Dr. Judy Wood postulates as the reason for the sudden collapse and all of that. Then we have Dmitry Kalazov talking about the nukes, and then we have Richard Gage talking about controlled demolition. Now, see, what if there were small elements of each part of their stories that were true, but no story was 100% true, right?
I'd say it'd be overcomplicated.
Exactly.
I'd say it'd be overcomplex to pull off.
Yeah. Well, there's no such thing as too overcomplex to pull off. Roy explained it like this. If you wanted to make sure that you could get a mystery that nobody would ever solve, try and do all these different things at the same time, and nobody would ever solve it because it would just be too freaking difficult to figure out how they did it. And I thought, wow, that's a really interesting thought. And that actually put me at rest for a point, you know. And he may be wrong, you know. But
perhaps. But
this is the way. Isn't this the kind of way the elite work, though? They try to make things too complicated to comprehend, and that's how they get away with their stuff.
And that's how they get away with saying, you know, the media get away with saying, especially in the early days, 2003, 2004, oh, which theory do you subscribe to about 9/11? And my answer was always, well, there is only one theory. It was a controlled demolition inside job. And a controlled demolition could take various forms, and an inside job can mean a lot of things too, because some people can say, oh, you think Bush did it, and some people can understand that it was perhaps a few secret societies who are outside of the countries and their intelligence arms, which are kind of one and the same.
Mm.
But, you know, it gives the media, when you have these waters muddy, it gives the media the opportunity to spin it and say, oh, which nutty theory do you subscribe to? Then it gives other genuine nutcases and other shills the opportunity to inject their own theories. And instead of just A, B, C, D, we could have E, F, G next week too, saying that Martians with 11th dimensional weapons from Zocon took down the towers, and you can't prove otherwise. And that's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And I was wondering, you know, you reach a point, right, and judges use this term in a recent case with Greg Hallett. The claims and evidence that he presents in his book are so obviously factually untrue that we're not even going to bother reading the book. You know, and this is the thing. What is so obviously untrue as to make somebody think that not digesting it, not looking at it at all, is beneficial for figuring stuff out? You know, is there a point to that type of reasoning. I mean, my opinion is it's like you've got to listen to everything, especially the stuff that you think is so crazy, or everything that you can in the human capacity. Like, for example, if I was to try and undergo an operation of watching every single 9/11 video on YouTube, I'd become an old man, right? But the interesting thing is, it's like as much as you can within reason, you know, not so much that your entire life is completely taken over by it and you become like there's some, you know, sweaty in your bottom room or your parents' basement kind of thing watching 9/11 videos all day and night type of person. No, definitely don't want to do that. But in terms of possibilities and all of that kind of stuff, I like to look at all possibilities and expect that most of them will be untrue. And I'd just like to know what the possibility is, and I'd like to know which side you're on. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. We'll be right back.
There's only one thing I need. Know whose side you want, whose side you want. Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Bloodlust and desire, carefree and individualized. The colors of your power, let love come shining through your eyes. We can be. We can be more than ever people, more than ever people, more than ever people.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of the fastest frickin' 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, and incidentally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, brought to you by our fabulous news agency, GorillaMedia.co.nz. Now, a recent article released by Dr. Lester Grinspoon from Normal says that Rick Simpson, who we've had on the show, and his postulation that cancer can be cured through the use of high potency THC hemp oil is a fraud. And here's Rick Simpson's response. Lester Grinspoon is a man whose day has come and gone, and I feel he is no longer in touch with reality when it comes to the subject of this plant's true medicinal use. All anyone has to do to prove what I'm saying is simply produce a small amount of this oil following our extractions at phoenixtears.ca. Then take the oil and put it on a skin cancer, diabetic ulcer, or severe burn and cover the affected area with a bandage. Change the bandage and apply fresh oil every 3 days and watch what happens. Grinspoon has truly made a fool of himself by coming out against the use of this oil, and in reality has proved to the public that he knows nothing about the subject. If Grinspoon truly had any concern for public safety, why would he not be exposing what doctors in his own field of psychiatry have been doing for decades? There is a very well done 2-part documentary that you can look on YouTube called The Marketing of Madness, which proves that psychiatry is really about murder. What Grinspoon and people who are in the field of psychiatry have been doing to the public is truly sickening. But finally, now it's all being exposed. If I was in Grinspoon's shoes, I would disappear as quickly as possible before the public catches up with him and puts a hemp rope around his neck. His take on Normal, and, you know, I support Normal. I've been doing videos and stuff like that for Dr. Green's, a little operation that's supported by Normal, the Dactory, here in New Zealand, New Zealand's first cannabis club, for some time. So, you know, and it's the thing. Even though I may have disagreements with people, I still support them anyway, simply because I can. I'm not required to, and not required to stop supporting them or anything like that. If somebody makes you choose your friends, then I think you should stop. You should choose to not be friends with them. As for Normal, they are simply a pack of lawyers who have been filling their pockets for years off the suffering of the public. Both Canada and the US fall under the jurisdiction of common law, and under common law, growing hemp is not a crime. Of course, lawyers don't want the public to know this because they would no longer be able to rob them of this right, and most lawyers would be out of work. In North America, for a very long time, there has been no real legal system. Instead of de jure courts, which are real courts of law, they have replaced them with de facto courts, which are courts of adjudication. What the public doesn't know is that legally, they have every right to refuse the services of such courts and can demand to have their case heard in a real common law de jure court. As I said, under common law, growing hemp is not a crime, as are in many other bogus charges people face in de facto courts which have no legal sanction. Every law, act, or statute that was ever put in place restricting the public's rights to grow hemp and use it in whatever way they choose are based in corruption. All these lawyers know this, but it is not in their best interest to bring the truth forward. There are some good people involved with Normal that want to see this plant once again made totally legal for anyone to grow and use, but this is not the aim of people who play leadership roles in Normal. They are simply there to deceive. Anyone who has been supporting this organization had better take a look at who has been running the show. When they do it, it becomes more than obvious that Normal and the people who run this organization are simply a fraud. Now, I was wondering, and the reason why I posted that up for Rick Simpson is because, well, he doesn't know how to do it, for one. And I think it's because this article below it, posted on the feed of gorillamedia.co.nz, that says medical marijuana, a note of caution. The article, in fact, written by Dr. Grinspoon, which I also posted on Guerrilla Media, because I think that the free exchange of ideas and having attacks and rebuttals and then more rebuttal and so on and so forth is a healthy thing. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe we should all just make total asinine assertions and then stick by them with guns and whatnot and kill anybody who tries to argue with us. Maybe that's the right thing to do, but I don't think so. But, you know, I wonder, because maybe somebody would get real aggressive with me, like Rick, he might get angry with me for in my small part, supporting Normal here in New Zealand and having people from Normal come on the show and things of that nature. And cannabis, as far as I'm concerned, is just one issue. One small, insignificant issue along with all the other small, insignificant issues. Because if you combine 1,000 insignificant issues, they all become pretty freaking significant, don't they? You know, we've got banking, we've got finance, we've got the poisons in our food supply, the medical industry, the military industrial complex, the illegal wars, and I could go on forever ascertaining the copious quantities of problems that we've got in this country and around the world. I could go on forever. There is no end to them. What I'm really interested in is actually having a debate on all of these particular issues. All right. Not because I'm some description of worry wart who wants to know all the information so I can make accurate decisions or whatever. I kind of do it more for the listenership and the readership of Guerrilla Media and all of that because, well, I don't know. Maybe they can make sense of something that I can't, and maybe they'll flick me an email one day that really makes sense to me, and suddenly I'll figure out something simply because I put it out there for public debate. I mean, this is how things in this universe seem to work. What goes around comes around, etc., etc. I'm not sure if I 100% believe in that, because I find that whoever does copious quantities of good in this world, more than likely, will have terrible things happen to them. Maybe that's our fate as humanity, is that of eternal persecution of righteousness and justice. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. It's the lighter side of genocide. And we'll be right back tomorrow at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and American Freedom Radio. Coming up next, I believe we have Christy from Truth Brigade Radio. Listen up, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be back for you tomorrow.